This week on the Barrag Ward Show, we're joined by Pete Boston from Dutrix to discuss managing pro bono work, finding time for collaboration, and dealing with poor client communication. This week's show is sponsored by Resource Guru and Envision. Boag World Show, the podcast about user experience, digital strategy, and a whole lot more. My name is Paul Boag, and joining me, as always, is Marcus. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm excited about playing with this new Recordy app that we're using that allows us all to magically record each other remotely over a long distance.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be good. You're such a cynic.
Pete, are you available next week to record this again?
I might be.
So, as you can tell, we're also being joined by Pete Boston. Hello, Pete.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, Marcus.
How you doing?
It's good to speak. It's been a long time since I've spoken to Pete.
Has been very long time without speaking to Paul. It's been quite nice, actually.
Oh, that's harsh. That's very hard.
Sorry, that didn't take long, did it?
No. So basically, Pete used to work at Headscape as a project manager and has moved on and is now working for a company called Dutrix. We've had Rob Borley, who was one of the founders of Dutrix, on the show a number of times. And Pete, you've been on a number of times over the years, haven't you?
No, I have actually, yeah.
Yeah. But as we were doing a season on kind of digital management issues, it seemed obvious to get you on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about what you're up to today and what Dutrix do and the kind of projects that you're managing. Because obviously when you were at Headscape, you used to be, you know, kind of managing typical web design projects. But it's a little bit different now, isn't it?
Yeah, things are exciting. Things are good. I moved on from Headscape. When was it? Was it March last year? So I've been at Dutrix for about 15 months now, I suppose.
Yeah.
So Dutrix is a, you know, development company, design development, you know, based in the south of the UK. We mainly build mobile applications, desktop applications, but also do APIs, websites, content management systems. We've even built an application for a smartwatch recently, which has been
a side project, which has been quite fun.
Currently I'm working on creating a set of dashboards for a company that we created a mobile tracking app for a couple of years ago, which is interesting. I mean, much like Headscape, I work on projects from all sorts of different industries, which is very nice. Last year I worked on a project which was an EPOS point of sale solution for an iPad, which was
cool
to work on. So yeah, it's
a bit broader. It seems to be broader than just the web, which is what you were doing at Headscape. I mean, Dutrix have been doing stuff with drones and all kinds of things, haven't they?
Little bits and pieces, a little bit of Google Glass. I mean, I think they like to experiment as well. So even if they don't necessarily do a project with a client, they'll discover and research latest technologies and make sure that they're up to speed. So we do websites as well, but it is broader. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Actually,
you make it sound like a load of boys with toys. Basically, something new and shiny comes along, and they want to play.
We've just got a lot of kids everywhere, just like lying around, and it is just an excuse to play around with gadgets. Just remembered, we've just launched a new website. I don't know whether you've seen it or not.
Yeah, I have.
Dutrix.com. There's a bit of a plug for you.
Yeah.
Design,
and it's really nice, actually. I really like it. That was Chris Sanderson that did that.
Yeah,
wasn't
it was Chris Sanderson. Yeah, he did that. It's got beautiful photography. I don't know if you noticed the photography.
Is that yours?
I thought it let it down a bit, the photography. I was wondering when you were going to get a pro in.
We got the pro in. They've turned me into a pro, apparently.
part of your job.
Yeah, Chris and I jointly did the photography, to be fair. But it was actually good fun. We had a couple of days where we said everybody needs to be in the office, and we tried to take as many photographs as possible, which didn't look too staged, but we just wanted to avoid stock photography. Funny enough, somebody said that looks like stock photography. That wasn't the idea.
It's not ideal.
It's a problem, though. I mean, when we redid the Headscape site and we're thinking about doing it again at the moment, if you want to stick to the kind of rules that you talk to clients about you know, what makes up good design and usage of imagery, all we've really got to play with are, you know, from an imagery point of view, is our faces and who we are, maybe where we work, the town, the city, or whatever we work. But that's kind of it. After that, it is just stock photography, yeah, or, you know, kind of really random abstract stuff. So,
and also your work.
Well, yeah, obviously that's a really easy thing for us to add colour and add imagery.
Yeah.
But we're working with a client at the moment that has exactly the same problem, but their work has nothing to do with anything aesthetic. So that it really is just them.
We were lucky because obviously we work in a nice place. It's not dissimilar to the old Headscape barn, actually. It's very nice sort of location, but also we've got a whole lot of clients with a whole lot of kit, and it's really difficult to make sort of cool kits look exciting from a photography point of view. Obviously you can, but it's quite a skill to capture it without just looking as though it's just like a bunch of, you know, boring kits. That's what I've been doing recently, and it's been good.
But is it true that all of the rest of the team get to play with all the kit and you're the grown-up that has to manage all the projects?
I'm until recently the oldest, but I'm not anymore, so I'm celebrating.
That's really sad when you become the oldest in the company, isn't it?
There is a lot of kit there, but
it's all just to play with. They're all a group of children playing with kit.
Yeah.
But it is true. I mean, you have to stay up to date, don't you? You have to keep on top of these latest innovations.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We were having a conversation about that in Slack recently, about keeping up to date. And it feels just impossible, doesn't it? There's so much going on, so many different areas.
Yeah.
Have you guys played with creating bots yet? That's the latest thing, isn't it?
Bots.
Obviously not, from the tone of your voice.
We have got a client who has been experimenting, yes.
Okay, yeah. That's the new thing that I'm going to have a play around with when I find some time. But it's finding the time, isn't it?
It is finding the time, yeah. And being a project manager, I don't get to do all the exciting things. I just get to do the things which make things run smoothly in the background.
That was my point. You're the grown-up, please.
I'm the grown-up,
But the trouble is, as a project manager, you have to keep up to date as well. So you need to learn, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's been one of the, that's been one of the learning curves and challenges is just for me is to, keep up to speed with technology and keep up with the guys and, you know, their rates of learning, which is generally amongst developers, pretty quick.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And have you got to go to any project managing conferences recently, or has that been off the table for a while?
I haven't actually. No. I was asked for one of them, and then I couldn't make the date. I don't think. No. I should do. I need to get up to speed, really, with get back into the project management conference scene, because it was very much enjoyable.
Yeah, we were talking with Brett last week about a load of different conferences are around, and there's more and more of them these days. So
Brett Harded?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
Cool.
Sam Barnes mentioned a couple as well.
He did.
Struggling to remember what they were.
Neither can I.
Yeah, I think the guys at White October do quite a few. They're based in Oxford.
Oh, I've not heard of them. That's cool.
Yeah.
White October.
Yeah, that's Holly's.
Holly's company.
Holly's company.
Ooh, yeah. We need to get Holly on the show.
You should. Yeah.
Damn, I forgot Holly. I'm sorry, Holly, if you're listening. Holly's a very talented project manager that we definitely need. We need her opinion on at some point. Which brings us on to the kind of subject of the podcast, which is that this season, as you know by now, we are answering your questions, really, about digital management issues just generally. This week, we're going to be looking at things like pro bono work, finding time for collaboration, dealing with poor client communication, that kind of thing. But really, it's fairly open-ended. And so we just want your questions, really, anything relating to managing digital. So you can send those questions by going to boag.world/questions. And you can submit them there in the comments on that page. But before we get into that, I just want to quickly talk about our sponsor Envision. Before we get into this week's questions, if you don't know Envision, they've got an amazing suite of productivity and design tools. We've talked in the last couple of weeks about their amazing prototyping tools, but this time I wanted to tell you about a free plugin that they offer. Why they want me to promote a free plugin? They seem to give away so much for free. I can't quite get my head around these guys and what their business model is. But anyway, that's fine. It's a free plugin for Sketch and for Photoshop called Craft. Okay. Now, I've only used it with Sketch. I haven't used it with Photoshop, but it allows you to, well, let's say you're creating a prototype. Or a design mock-up or whatever else. It allows you to insert real unique content into those prototypes with just kind of a simple click. So, for example, if you're mocking up a page that's got headlines or articles or an address in or a username, instead of just typing Laura Mibson or having to make up all of that content, you can just click a button and it will grab a real headline and put something in or get a username from somewhere and put it in, right? So it'll also do the same with placeholder images. So if you need a load of placeholder images, it will go out, find them, grab them, put them in. Now, that can either be just leave it to its own devices and it will kind of find stuff to drop in for you. Or alternatively, it can pull content from a live website. So you could point it at a website and say, grab me a load of headlines from this website, which is a really quick and easy way. You know, if you're, say, doing a news listing on a homepage, you can just grab all the news stories from the existing homepage and pull it into your prototype. So it's real, you know, decent content. It's also got a really powerful duplication tool for things like thumbnails or listings. So let's say you've got a news story with a headline, a bit of a description and a thumbnail with it. You can duplicate that news listing because, say, you want three or four on a page. But it won't just, it'll update the content. So each of those news listings have got its own thumbnail, its own heading and its own description. So it's really quite a powerful way of building prototypes. It'll even create style guides for you, allow you to universally update colors or typography, and all of that's for free. So, you know, you can only imagine what their paid products are like. So if you want to try out some either Craft or some of their paid products, you can get 3 months for free of unlimited prototypes, mobile user testing and loads of other stuff by going to boag.world/envision and enter the code INV-BOAG. Right. So that's Envision. Marcus.
Ah, look, you noticed.
I know.
I put my hand up.
We've got a new feature in our recording software where he can raise his hand.
I was wondering how long it would take you to notice, and it was instant. I'm very impressed, Paul. All I was going to say is I've been using Envision this afternoon.
Oh, have you really?
Yes.
How are you getting on with it?
Absolutely great.
Good. I'm glad you said that. It was a bit of a gamble at that point.
Yeah, wasn't it? No, really good. The test will come when stakeholders at the client have to start adding comments. So we'll see on that one.
So when's that going to happen?
Probably early next week.
Oh, good. So next week, you can tell us how that went.
Yes.
And I'm sure the guys at Envision would like honest answers to it. Yeah. So, you know, if it doesn't go so well, we'll talk about why. It'd be interesting.
Cool.
So, good. Right, let's get on to the actual questions for this week. We've got a great list of questions. And it starts with a question from a guy called Paul. Now, this isn't me, just to clarify. If I'm going to make up questions, I will do so in a more imaginative way than using my own name.
Well, I don't know.
You got a very low opinion of me, Pete. Okay, so Paul's question is, how do you manage pro bono projects without the client taking advantage of you? So I think probably the first place to start, I don't know which of us are going to start on this, but is under what circumstances do you think you would do a pro bono project? Has Dutrix done any pro bono work?
Well, what does pro bono mean?
I think it's a good question
to start with.
I think free is the way I interpret that.
Pro bono does not mean free.
Ah.
Pro bono publico means for the good of the public. So it's actually, it's not, it might be for no charge, but it doesn't necessarily mean free. So I guess there's different, different scenarios where you might do pro bono work, whatever you call it, pro bono, free. it could be for a friend, I guess. It could be for a charitable organisation or a good cause. The most common way of doing, quotes, free, pro bono, whatever you want to call it, work, is the classic sales director where they say, yeah, there'll definitely be another project here. As long as we do this one for free, and that's happy with it.
Yeah, I don't think that's pro bono. That's a loss leader, and I think
I'm going to cover does cover that as well. So whether it be free or heavily discounted or however, it does.
Yeah, let's just say free projects.
Free projects, okay. So yeah, there's a couple of scenarios. So yeah. Charitable work.
So, I mean, the one thing with that example that you just gave, oh yeah, there's going to be a bigger project coming along. Marcus, how do you deal with that? I know in my head how I deal with it, but I'm interested. I can't remember a scenario where that's happened to us.
I probably did a long time ago. Don't do it anymore.
Now you just say sling your hook, don't you?
Not quite in those words. but I don't think it's genuine. I think it's, you know, it always feels that exact scenario of, oh, if you just do this one for me quickly and cheaply or for nothing, and it will lead on to something else, just raises huge alarm bells to me. And make the point that, you know, we can't work for free. We have to pay people. We have to pay our rent. We have to, we can't survive as a company if we work like that all the time. So, I say no, generally. I mean, there are certain scenarios where certain clients, again, this hasn't happened for years, but would try and get you to spec their whatever it was for free. And I stopped doing that as well, because it would take weeks sometimes to try and spec something. We talked, I think it was last week, about this idea of having a discovery project on its own before you do the main project. And that's what came out of those initial bad experiences of basically being kind of dragged into, into trying to spec somebody's website or application or whatever it was they wanted. It was usually something very complicated, and they weren't really playing fair. Just trying to get.
I think people who or companies or organisations who are vulnerable to that are probably smaller organisations or people who. Are trying to grow and hoping to get bigger contracts, and they might be
my response to it is, which is not my idea, I've heard someone say this once, which I just think is a genius response to that particular scenario, which is, yeah, sure, I'm perfectly happy to do this project at a reduced cost or free of charge if we put a contract in place for the bigger piece of work.
Yeah, sure.
Good call.
Which I thought was a good response to it, isn't it, actually? You know, because it, it ties the client in. And if they're not willing to do that, then it really is bullshit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then it could essentially be sort of paid business development, which is
yeah. But okay, so let's say there's a scenario where there is a piece of work, right? You've decided maybe to work for a local charity that you want to support, or you're helping a friend out, or you're doing a loss leader, or whatever the scenario is. So you've agreed to do this pro bono work. What because there is not a financial cost to the client, and I think this is the driver behind Paul's question,
mm-hmm.
there is nothing that stops the client just taking the Michael with it and saying, oh, can we do this too? And yeah, what about this? And it just kind of spirals out of control. So I'm kind of quite interested, Pete, in your thoughts about how to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, so I mean, it does happen, and there are a few things that you can do to cover yourself. I think you need to treat it as any other project. So you need to scope the project out. You need to establish the success criteria. Agree terms up front. So you need to sort of set milestones and timescales. You need to set those timescales. You need to establish the decision makers from the client, just to make sure you can get successful sign off. You know, all these things that you do in a normal project, write a statement of work so that you can have yourself covered. And then, apply your standard pricing. But then you can apply the discount or, if it is completely pro bono and, you aren't charging for it at all. That then is reflected in any statement of work you write up and agreement you write, just so the client can see and appreciate, what you're giving. You could even send dummy bills, at the end of each milestone, again, just to remind the client that, and not necessarily that, the client, but other members of the team who may not, appreciate, what you're giving, just so they realise.
I like that idea a lot. The idea of actually costing it and pricing it like a normal project, and then just applying a 100% discount, yeah, exactly. Whatever.
Yeah,
that's nice. I like that a lot.
And another thing, another thought I had was. You need to schedule it in as well. We at Dutrix work pretty much exclusively, using Agile and running sprints. So this client might get, two sprints, and they will be scheduled into a calendar or to calendar dates. And once that's up, that's up. And if they, at sprint planning, they make a load of assumptions, and we spec out at a sprint. If halfway through the sprint they say, I know we want this, well, in that case, firstly, during sprints you shouldn't do that anyway, but if during sprint planning they want to take something out or they want to add something, then you just need to make sure that that's taken out as well. So again, you just need to make sure that you cover yourself by doing all the normal things you do in a project, but then you're just at the end of it, don't charge them anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a good point you make there about, okay, you might not be constraining the project in terms of price, although you're suggesting you could do that as well, but you can constrain it with time, the amount of time you're investing in it, which is essentially what you were talking about with the Agile approach.
That's how we'd approach it. We would, agree up front the number of sprints, and then obviously there's only a certain amount of work you can do during a sprint because you've got a set amount of time.
Yeah. I mean, this is a big problem, I guess, as well for people that work internally within organisations where there isn't charging for work that's done. So, I mean, in those kinds of situations, you need to find other factors by which to constrain a project, and time is one of them. But also, I think, like you say, I think even internally, working with internal clients, it's good to demonstrate the cost of the project to the organization. And one of the things that I often encourage internal teams to do is they cost out every project in terms of how much it costs the organization, and that goes to senior management on a monthly basis, because that then makes people think twice about asking you to do some trivial thing, because they know senior management are going to see, you know, what it is that they've been asking for.
I have a question though, Pete. The new Dutrix website, was that done as a proper project?
Good question.
That's an excellent question. And I need to be careful what I say, because I know the Dutrix directors will probably be listening to this.
Oh, no, just dob them in.
I'll mess up in a minute as well, Pete. So
No, it's fine. I think they had good intentions to run it as sprints. I think it was run as sprints. From what I can gather, it sounds like the Dutrix directors were quite difficult clients. How can I put it? No, it was fine. I think as is always the case when you do your own website, it's a really, really hard thing to do. And I think it was quite a, and I remember doing it with the Headscape website as well, actually. You know, it's a real eye opener to see how, you know, things work from the client end. And I think a useful exercise to go through anyway. But I think Rob and Kevin and Chris had good fun, bit of banter going around on doing the site. But in the end, I think it was turned around in probably three sprints, probably. So like 6 weeks or so.
That's not bad.
Which is, not too bad, maybe a couple of months, but it was difficult as well, because we were, you know, as is always the case when you're doing your own website, you know, we were trying to fit paid work around it. The whole agile sprint approach was a little bit loose, shall we say, because it's, you know, ultimately paying clients take priority. So
I think you shouldn't get too uptight about that personally. It's like, okay, it's going to get delayed, so be it.
Yeah, exactly.
And as long as your current site isn't damaging the company anyway, then, you know, get it done when you've got the time to do it. And we're also with the new Headscape site going to look at experimenting with Drupal 8, I think.
You're talking about moving across to Drupal 8?
Well, on a site that where it, you know, obviously if it was a new client site, that would be maybe a bit of a risk to do that, but for us it's less so it's a perfect opportunity to experiment with that, but it probably will take longer because of
again, it's you know, it's a chance to play when not new technology, you guys use Drupal all the time, don't you, but the latest version of it and that kind of thing. It's good. And you haven't got the massive legacy of that horrible Boag World site with thousands of posts on it anymore, have you?
there are still a couple of areas where the content is generated, where content from the central database goes to both sites. So we need to cross that bridge, but not yet.
Right. Okay. One problem at a time. Okay, so pro bono projects. Now, Marcus, you briefly mentioned loss leaders, you know, as being a slightly different thing to pro bono. So do you, in your mind, is there a place for loss leader projects?
I think there's a place to maybe discount. A complete loss leader, then we're back to the, can you do this for me and something good's coming in the future? But I think, sometimes you need to decide whether you're willing to discount a project because you think that you like the client, you like what they do. Chances are it will turn out to be 5 years of work. Then in that situation, then, you know, and there's a fixed budget. What, you know, that fixed budget isn't quite going to cover what you're going to do. So sometimes we've made the decision to discount, definitely.
Okay, let's move on to the next question on the list, which is a bit of a long one, but it's a good one. It's from Rob Cooper. He writes, I have a client that had truly horrendous internal communication, meaning I got dragged from pillar to post with incorrect instructions from members of staff on the website build. In the end, the website I delivered was miles away from the boss's original idea, and as such, a long battle of my payment ensued, where I had to argue I only acted on instructions from his own staff. How could have this been prevented? Good one, this one.
Yeah, that's a horror story, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel for Rob over that. We've been there once or twice, haven't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can think of a few.
None of us have got an answer. We're all just going, yeah, that's a bad situation.
Well, I mean, what it sounds like here is that there was the client or the product owner, you know, wasn't around, and it sounds like the person running the show didn't have a, you know, decision-making authority. I think that's probably what was lacking there. And I think, you know, if all decisions need to be sort of pushed back to somebody who's never around, you know, that's always going to be a challenge. So I guess, yeah, from an early stage, one of the first things you need to do is establish roles and responsibilities, and you have to establish who, from the client end, is going to be the, you know, the product owner and stroke decision maker. And yeah, that person has to have authority on those decisions. They can't, you know, need to always go back and escalate it to others.
I think there's also, sorry, Marcus, go
ahead. I was going to say, I think that sometimes these situations appear purely because people can be difficult. And often people in power can be difficult. We've certainly experienced that on an occasion. I can remember one when the managing director, CEO, whoever it was, agreed to all these things. Yes, I will, you know, my marketing director will make the decisions, blah, blah, blah. And then when it all came down to it, he swooped and pooped, as we've said many times in the past. And, you know, there was no arguing with him. So I think to a certain extent, you've just got to accept that sometimes people are difficult, and you've just got to kind of make the best of it. I mean, as Pete said, you've got to ensure that, you know, statements of work are in place, what you're going to deliver is agreed upon, how you're going to work is agreed upon, you know, what the lines of communication are, all those kind of things. But just kind of, I don't know, just be aware along the way that something might come in from left field that you weren't expecting. And that's going to change from project to project. I haven't got any kind of golden answers as to how you can deal with difficult people in the situation I just described. But yeah, you've got to do as much as you can up front and get people to agree to stuff, but except that maybe sometimes it isn't always going to go to plan.
Yeah, I think it also raises the importance of making sure you document everything. It's a boring task, though it is. Having notes from whether they be kickoff meetings or just progress meetings or sprint planning meetings or whatever, having that documented and distributing those notes is really important. And don't just document things that you agreed, you know, also document things which either weren't discussed or weren't agreed, just to make sure that you've covered yourself. Yeah, you're right. It's difficult, and I suppose sometimes you can, you know, as a project manager, you try and gauge people. You get to know, you know, you get to know how people tick, and everyone is different. But I think you can sometimes get, you know, bitten in the bum because you think that somebody has, you know, you think somebody's perhaps easy, when, you know, further down the line they can become difficult. So that's why it's important just to document, you know, well, you know, whoever the client is whatever your first impressions are of them.
I think if I'd been in Rob's position here, in hindsight, obviously, you know, it's easy in hindsight, but if Rob was in that position again, I think you're right. First, step one is to have a good, solid statement of work that outlines what's going to be, you know, what needs to be done. Two is he'd obviously had he'd had a conversation with the bosses at some stage, because he talks about their original idea. So he was aware of what that original idea was. So my gut reaction is, at the point where you deviate from that original idea, I think I would feel the need to pass that back via the boss. Not as a kind of we've decided to go in this new direction. We need your approval for it. We're all going to sit on our hands until we get it. but more kind of making sure they're in the loop, you know, saying this is what we're going to do. Unless we hear back from you in, you know, the next couple of days, we'll presume that's all right and proceed. Just so that, again, it's about covering yourself, as Pete said, because there are lots of, you have lots of little informal conversations along the way. And if you're not, as Pete mentioned, documenting those as you go, then you're going to get yourself into trouble sooner or later, aren't you, really?
Mm. Yeah. And also, I think in the question, Rob spoke about being flagged Twitter posts with incorrect instructions from members of staff. And I think if I am running a project and the person that, you know, I've scoped the project out with suddenly isn't around anymore, I'd have concerns about that, and I'd try and figure out why. And I'd also want to make sure that whoever is running the show in his or her absence is going to have their decisions respected.
Yeah, and it's about having one definitive decision maker, isn't it? Because I know that some people take the attitude of, I only want to deal with one person on the client side. Now, I actually don't feel like that, because what can happen sometimes in that situation is somebody makes a passing comment that the client then takes as gospel. And you're forced to implement it, and you never get to talk to that original person and find out whether it's, you know, actually a good idea, how strongly they feel about it. So I prefer to be directly engaged with all the different stakeholders across an organization. But ultimately, there needs to be one individual that says yay or nay to a piece of feedback. And so... It sounds like in Rob's situation, there were lots of different people that were all feeding into him, you know, with different instructions, and there was no single decision maker.
Yeah.
Which you've got to avoid, haven't you, really? Okay. Anything else to add to that one, or should we move on?
Well, what I was going to say was just, if in situations like that, obviously, you know, if you're running Scrum, you have regular meetings anyway, but it's good to have the product owner or whoever's running the project from the client side regularly updated as to what's going on. You know, that's the whole idea, really.
So that's interesting. So in, if you'd been running this project as an agile project, mm-hmm. would you have expected the bosses, not the point of contact, but the bosses to have been engaged with that process?
No, but we would have expected the bosses to have nominated a product owner who would sit in on, you know, daily stand-ups to make sure that, you know, we were going down the right route and just make decisions along the way. But that product owner would have to have a decision-making authority to make sure that, you know, he or she was able to make those decisions. And then if they needed to check with the, you know, with the boss, that's fine. But I think regular communication, and I think we might cover that a bit in the next question as well, is absolutely key.
I think to maybe summarize this is where this project went wrong, where there were too many people communicating with Rob, whereas it should have gone through a single place. Sure, Rob could talk to people, but he needed to be agreeing all of this stuff with probably a project manager at their end.
Yeah, it's this idea of a product owner, isn't it?
Yep.
With your product owners, so you get them involved in the daily stand-ups every day, do you?
Sometimes. It depends on the client, to be honest.
Right.
Sometimes clients are happy for us just to get on with it. Some clients we are sort of on T&M contracts with them, so we sort of run sprints here internally, just as our own sort of structure, and the product owner sometimes joins us. Other clients, the product owner joins us every day for stand up. It depends on the project, but that's how we like to run it.
Yeah, no, I'm always interested in that as to how heavily involved you get the client in the process.
Yeah.
And it that's what becomes problematic, isn't it? Is that, you know, with the swoop and poop bosses that are high up, you know, getting their time is so difficult.
It is, yeah.
Yet they can absolutely derail an entire process if they so wish.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to the example of where we had we had that client, Marcus, that you mentioned earlier, you know, that came in at the end of the project and said, no, I know I said I was going to delegate authority, but this is wrong. We can't proceed on this basis. We did end up charging them more for that, didn't we?
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is fair enough. I mean, that is the boss's prerogative. If the boss wants to turn around at the end of the project and say, okay, we've done all of this work, but I want to shelve it all and pay for a load of new work, then that's kind of okay, isn't it?
I guess. Yeah. It does make you wonder. It's a bit of a waste, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And demoralising for the team yeah, as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, especially if, you know, both teams, particularly the internal team, or the client team. So, yeah, avoid it if possible.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, sometimes decisions will be made in a project and design will be signed off, et cetera, and then, you know, 2 months later, there'll be certain input. People just change their mind. They'll think, yeah, I thought this was right, but I've lived with it and I'm not sure. Now I know I've signed it off. So, you know, we need to go back and I know that that'll affect cost and timings, but we need to deal with it. And yeah, that happens rarely, but it does.
Yeah. I mean, because the thing is, of course, some clients, you know, they've not necessarily seen, you know, they find it hard to picture what something is going to end up being. Mm-hmm. You know, it's quite hard to visualize this stuff if you're not, you know, a regular, regularly involved in building applications or websites or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to our final question, which is from Daryl Snow. He writes, given that a lot of collaboration needs to happen between teams of web professionals working together on a project, but at the same time, they all need to be spending time extremely focused on what they're doing without interruptions, how and when do you handle communication? Now, we talked a lot about communication last week with Brett, but we didn't really deal with this balance between people actually getting on with their work and communicating. You know, so I'm interested, especially in a kind of agile environment, how you deal with that, Pete.
Yeah, so with agile, the key thing is having daily stand-ups, and stand-ups need to be run really carefully. They need to include the team, the scrum master, and some of the product owner. In our case, we do sometimes don't include him or her, and it's important to keep them really short so that everyone essentially covers what they did yesterday, what their plan is for today, and get the scrum master to, you know, clear out any blockages. Now we don't encourage our team are all situated in the same office. And that's something which is really important to us. If a team member wants to, you know, lock themselves away, stick their headphones on, turn their emails off or whatever, that's their prerogative. And if they need to do that, that's great. But we do encourage team members to sort of communicate, you know, sort of wheel themselves across to somebody else's desk and ask a question as much as possible. If they get to a stage where, you know, they just could do with the day working from home, for example, just to really, you know, have a completely undistracted day, that's fine. But we would still have a stand up in the morning, make sure everyone else knows what everyone else is doing. So that the next day, you know, that you can then, you know, discuss where you are. It's a tricky one. It is a fine balance because sometimes, you know, some developers or some, you know, designers just want to have complete peace and silence and no distractions at all. But I think the reality of a project, you know, if you're going to get it running smoothly, you just have to communicate. You have to get people talking to each other. You know, be it by, you know, voice. Or face to face, I think that's ideal. But if you do have a remote team, you know, use Slack, you know, or, you know, have regular chats on Skype or Hangouts or whatever. It's an interesting question, though.
I agree with that. I think that really people should be in, people within a team should be able to contact anyone, any other member of the team, whenever they feel like, unless that person has said, hang on, don't contact me for the next day or half a day or whatever. I think it, that's the way around it should be. And that way you're more like,
really?
Yeah, really.
What about, I mean, one of the things that, that I favour, there are different types of communication, aren't there, if you think about it? You know, there's what I call asynchronous communication and real-time communication. So, you know, I find it quite frustrating, the idea anybody can suddenly shout at me on Skype, or they can suddenly, you know, kind of grab my attention, you know, by wheeling over to me and sitting next to me. It seems to me that an asynchronous method, which I can check every so often, like Slack or email or something like that, is a lot more, a lot less intrusive. And if somebody's inquiry can't wait, I don't know, an hour while I finish what I'm doing, is that really, you know, yeah, is it really that urgent?
Well, I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, if I'm going to wheel over to someone else's desk, or Ed's going to wheel over to Dan's desk or something like that, they will, it won't just, they won't just instant, well, that's not what I was going to say, they won't just wheel over, they do, especially those two. But I think, you know, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And then wheel over, is fine. It's just rather than sort of like, I know I'm blocked out for the next 3 hours working on this, don't talk to me. You may as well be, you know, you may as well be at home with everything switched off, is kind of my view on that.
Yeah, but 3 hours isn't that long, is it really?
I think it depends how you get used to working within a team. I think it's certainly from my experience with the guys, you know, at Dutrix for the last 18 months or so, is that they kind of know how each other works. Some like to, you know, shut themselves away for a little while. You know, quite regularly, somebody will wheel themselves over to somebody else and they'll sort of say, no, go away, come back in an hour.
Yeah.
And they do that. You know, if you really are busy with something and you just can't spare time, you know, they'll say, come back in an hour, or come back in 10 minutes or whatever. And that's fine, but I think they all do it to each other, and they know that the benefit they get from that is going to, you know, be rewarded by, you know, them being able to do the opposite. They can go and ask a question, you know, from somebody else the next time. If they're initially they're asked a question.
I'm a great fan of having some kind of indicator that you don't want to be disturbed. You know, I remember right back in the Town Pages days, Pete, that I used to sometimes put a sign on my desk saying "piss off."
Yeah, but, we should give you a hat which says "leave me alone" or something.
Well, the kind of universal signal is I've put headphones on.
Yeah,
I was, yeah.
That's, you know, that's kind of the universal head, you know, sign at our place. You know, yeah. People do wear headphones. You know, they've got some decent noise cancelling headphones, and they completely blocks it out. So in that case, you know, you would slap them, or, you know, sort of, I ignore all that. I just go and tap them on the shoulder and say, wait.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, you always were a nightmare with this, Pete. You would send me an email and then Skype me to tell me you sent me an email.
And then get up and come and talk to you.
Yes.
Yeah, but that, I would need to know an answer. No, it is about just, you know, sort of gauging how people work. Some people are more, you know, some people are happier for you to do it than others. And you weren't that happy for other people are quite happy to be distracted. So
yeah, and that is
quite
true,
like, you know, it, I think sometimes. It's finding that balance, isn't it?
It is. You're right. It's very much
difficult. People, Pete. That's what it is.
Oh, shut up. Well, no, I just think, you know, some of us struggle to concentrate more than others and get distracted easier is the truth of it.
That's true.
You know, and once I finally get into the zone of something and finally kind of settle down to do something, it only takes somebody saying, can I have a word? And it breaks it with me. Well, I think some people are much better at, you know, dropping in and out of tasks.
Yeah.
So it's understanding that, isn't it, really?
I think another point is the guys at Dietrich's, or us at Dietrich's, we do all work from home probably one day a week.
Right.
And people know that they are going to have a day a week that they can work from home. So that they will already have a day, maybe a couple of days sometimes, where they have had that entire day with it, where they're alone, they can really focus. So they sort of know when they come into the office that they're more likely to be distracted.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Yeah,
whenever I used to come into the Headscape office, because I used to come in so rarely, I would just write off the day as being any kind of constructive thing at all. So there you go.
So, anyway, I was just wondering what else I was going to say about that. But I think really for us, the key thing is, we know that when everybody communicates at half past 9 in the morning, have a stand up, which lasts, 10 minutes, quick updates where everyone is. And then you go off, and then, the important thing is doing a stand up to make sure that you don't, that the stand up doesn't end up being like half an hour or an hour long.
Yeah.
And that you make sure that, if it seems that people are having a slightly more detailed conversation, you just say, look, guys, can you take this offline and discuss it later.
Yeah, I mean, that's the role of the Scrum Master, isn't it, to manage that kind of thing?
Yep.
Does that normally fall to you?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. I presumed that was the case.
Yes.
Cool. All right, well, hopefully Paul, Rob and Daryl, those answers have helped a little bit, and I hope it's helped other people as well. But I think we'll wrap it up at that point and talk very briefly about our next sponsor, which is a new one. It's a project management software, actually, called Resource Guru. And Resource Guru is a cloud-based team calendar. So it's a bit like, so basically allows you to have like a calendar with different people in or different resources. It doesn't have to be just people, actually. And then you can drag and drop availability into it. So it's got a simple drag and drop interface that's fast. It's a kind of simple way to schedule people, equipment and other resources. Meeting rooms is a great example of it. So it allows you to see the big picture at a glance, who's busy, who's available, who's off work, that kind of thing. But you can also customize it. So you can add your own custom fields and, set up your own filters based on, for example, you could have, different people with different skills or a part of different departments or in different locations or whether they're freelance or permanent. So you can use these kinds of filters to find the right kind of people, and schedule their time in, but also to report in any way that you want to. So it's fully customizable, and you can have all these different settings for each of your resources, to deal with things like overbooking or, that kind of stuff. Clashes are generally automatically prevented, and bookings can be added to a waiting list, which is quite nice, so that you can, manage your capacity planning further ahead, and all of that kind of stuff can be dealt with. They're offering a trial, and it only takes a few seconds to sign up and give it a go. I've been playing with it myself, and I really like it. Unfortunately, I've no team to manage these days, as it's just me by myself.
Oh.
But listeners of BOAG World can use the coupon code BOAG World, and so as well as the 30 days free trial, you'll get an additional month for free, so that gives you 2 months to try it out. So you can use that coupon code by going to resourceguru.io. must be a cool organization. All the cool startups are .io. resourceguru.io/BOAG World. All right, so that about wraps it up. Marcus, what do you have for us?
You'll be glad to hear this is the last. I've decided this is the last of Nick Johnson Hill's very silly, very bad jokes.
I'm quite sad, actually. I was really getting into those.
There are more, but I'm going to try and find something different. But this, I think this is possibly my favourite because it's so silly.
Okay.
What's the stupidest animal in the jungle?
Don't know. Go on.
A polar bear.
Yeah. Well, it's factually correct. So there we go. That's good.
That's the 385th joke I've told on this show.
Oh, that's scary. No, that's not true. That's not true, because you weren't on from show one.
No, and I've told more than one on many occasions, but there you go.
Yes. There you go. So just a quick reminder to send us more questions. We're going to run out pretty soon if we don't get more questions from you guys. You can send them, you can post them in the comments at boag.world/questions, or just email them to me at paul@boagworld.com. Next week, we're going to be joined by Emma, who is Pete's replacement at Headscape. And I'm coming into the office, aren't I, Marcus?
You are, yes.
Ooh, very exciting.
Yes, an actual face-to-face show. I always like that.
Woohoo! That would be very exciting. Oh, yes, and by the way, for those that were paying attention, and nobody was, the guys from Clear Left that were going to join us this week couldn't make it, so Pete very kindly stepped in at the last minute. But we can guarantee it will be Emma next week, and the people from Clear Left will be joining us soon. Pete, thank you so much, mate. Always great to chat with you, as always.
No problem at all, indeed.
Yeah, good to talk to you again. And we'll maybe get you on later in the season.
Yeah, love to.
If you're up for it. Yeah, cool. But for now, thank you for joining us. And thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. And we'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Oh,